From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Happy Hanukkah to those of you of the Jewish faith. Later on tonight, an investigation of all things. Here's what's happening. President Donald Trump wants to send astronauts where no man has gone before. Mr. Trump authorized the acting NASA administrator, Robert M. Lightfoot Jr., to lead an innovative space exploration program to send American astronauts, of course, back to the moon, but eventually to Mars. He said this during a White House ceremony. It was a big story. Robert Zimmerman, our science advisor and space historian with us. Robert, what do you think of this?
My response on Behind the Black, my website, was yawn, same old, same old.
Now, what do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? Well, in 2004, George Bush declared we're going to go to the moon by 2015. In 2010, Obama said we're going to go to an asteroid instead by 2020. And so now in 2017, Trump declares we're going to go back to the moon. In all those years since 2004, where have we actually gone? We humans, United States, we haven't gone anywhere. We can put astronauts into space. We still can't. When George Bush in 2004 made that announcement, George, he said that we're going to retire the shuttle and replace it with another vehicle. Well, that vehicle isn't going to fly for at least another 4 years, but I think five is really more realistic. This is a joke, and I think reporters and the public should stop being so credulous and accept these pronouncements by politicians. The way we're, you know, right now it's all been empty promises. They've wasted $33 billion, and by the time the Orion SLS capsule flies with people on, it'll be up to more than $43 billion. And they will have accomplished none of this stuff. What we really have to do is just stop depending on the government to make these empty promises. We have to realize they're empty promises and focus on getting the government to do what it has to do to encourage private enterprise, property rights, and profit in space. Because if that happens, just like the United States was built in the 1800s and 1900s and became the most prosperous nation in the history of the universe, we allow profit and private property and innovation in space by private companies and private individuals. And guess what? We will conquer the solar system in a blink of an eye.
If we're not careful, China's going to go right past us.
China's trying to do a Soviet-style program. They will plod along and get stuff done, but it's going to take them forever to get it done. They'll do stuff. And you know what? Eventually, the lumbering turtle federal NASA government will get something done for way too much money. But I would like to have it happen in my lifetime. I've been wanting that for 50 years, and I'll tell you right now, this isn't the way to do it. And blah, 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 blah.
And there's a new book out called Pioneer by Robert Zimmerman, I hear.
That's right. I have a science fiction book out. I actually wrote it in 1982. It was sitting gathering dust. I reread it for the first time in decades about 3 months ago and said, my gosh, this has got to get published. Because it's set 200 years in the future, and it's ironic. It's like 40 years since I wrote it, and it's actually accurate. It's not dated in the slightest. It's a first contact story. It involves a mystery, finding a dead body on Mars that should actually have been on an asteroid beyond Jupiter. And then aliens involved as well, first contact. So, yes, George, that's what I'm doing myself.
Good job, my friend. Thank you. Robert Zimmerman, space historian. Listen to this story. The exceptionally high tides this time of the year off British Columbia can turn that rocky western coast of Vancouver Island into a graveyard. We get lots of calls there. Bones from gray whales, sea lions, and killer whales wash ashore, piling on the beach along fallen evergreens. But a few days ago, Taz, a 6-year-old Rottweiler dog, sensed something different about a bone tangled in a bed of kelp. Taz darted away from her owner, Mike Johns, to inspect it, sniffing a piece that jutted out on a beach in the hamlet of the Jordan River. Her instincts were right. Mr. Johns followed behind her and pushed away the kelp, revealing his dog's discovery. A tibia and fibula attached to a left human foot, with a white ankle sock and a black running shoe. In any other part of the world, a sneaker with a human foot washing ashore might be a terrifying discovery, enough to frighten residents and stir fears of a gruesome murder or serial killer on the loose. But so far, not in British Columbia, where these discoveries have become so common that they are tracked. It was the 13th foot to wash ashore since 2007. What a strange story. Suspected New York City bus terminal bomber Akayed Ullah has been charged now with terror offenses. The Bangladeshi immigrant is accused of providing support to a terrorist organization and using a weapon of mass destruction. The 27-year-old was wounded in the attack when his pipe bomb blew up on him. A United Nations diplomat is warning about the need to decrease tensions with North Korea due to concerns that Kim Jong-un could develop biological weapons. And it's also reported that North Korea is very close to testing and detonating a nuke again. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us. John, if this one happens, I think this is going to be it.
Well, I don't think that this is what I said before. I don't think he can do anything until after February 25th. So I do think Kim, you know, that's when the end to the Seoul Winter Olympics take place. You can't start a war on the Korean Peninsula when you've got the billions of dollars of investment in the International Olympic Committee and the Korean Olympic Committee all over the planet, basically.
Yeah, but Kim could still launch. He could do it now.
Oh, he could, but I don't think that the U.S. will retaliate in kind until after the Olympics. On the other hand, I think that when you have, you know, Rex Tillerson making a statement today, our Secretary of State, that the U.S. is willing to meet the North Koreans any place, any time, without preconditions, for an open dialogue, it really indicates that this is the last-ditch sort of attempt, PR, that the U.S. is performing in order to justify that a military strike, that all diplomatic options were exhausted. And Kim reported that in response to the overture by Tillerson, the response was, we will continue our program full steam, pedal to the metal on nukes and long-range ballistic missiles. So that's where it stands.
John, during my Coast Insiders chat tonight with Coast Insiders, obviously, one of our listeners said, you've been talking about Iran, you've been talking about North Korea, are you fear-mongering? And my answer was, no, I really believe that these are points that could turn into tragedies, sadly, and wars will break out. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, you're not, there's no fear-mongering here. This is like helping people become aware of these hot spots. I mean, North Korea obviously is the crisis around the globe right now, where it's most likely to be a U.S. military action. Iran, you know, the decision on the part of Trump on the 6th of December to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital has, you know, created this wave of rioting and protesting around the globe. But you've got Mike Pence and Tillerson have received a very cold reception on this issue in the European Union, who it continues to insist that the final resolution of the fate of Jerusalem has to lie with direct talks between Palestinians and Israelis and can't be determined unilaterally by any one state. Well, that's fine, except for the fact that there's virtually no movement on any kind of a peace opportunity. So I think that, you know, the Iranians have announced today that they are going to be supplying Hamas with missiles and various kinds of weaponry, and in Gaza, and I don't think that should come as any surprise to anybody, since they've been doing it all along. So the situation is very tense with Iran, but I think that the real critical incident right now that people should be paying attention to is North Korea.
Absolutely. John, thank you. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. A former Facebook executive, now the current CEO of a venture capital firm, says in an interview that social media is damaging society, and he has voiced concerns about its impact on his own children. He will not let them use social media at all. He simply says it's destroying how society works. What do you think of that? An amazing story we've had over the last couple days on coasttocoastam.com. Astronomers are set to scan an alien comet for signs of extraterrestrial technology. The cigar-shaped asteroid sailed past Earth last month and is the first interstellar object seen in the solar system. A team of alien-hunting scientists, led by a Russian billionaire, Yuri Milner, will scan the comet this week before it sails beyond the reach of Earth's telescopes. They say they are looking for radio signals, claiming the mysterious visitor could be an alien spaceship. Humans, of course, are great at making short-term self-interest choices. We're less skilled at making long-term decisions with the greater good in mind. Now, this isn't just an interesting quirk of human nature. It's a fundamental flaw that threatens our very existence. Up next, Richard Spicer and Linda Sherman back with us on Coast to Coast. Our choice, extinction or evolution, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our choice, extinction or evolution, by Richard Spitzer and Linda Sherman, the analyst and the astrologer. Let me introduce Richard here. He's a trend analyst, has been developing research programs for business and economic behavior and future trends for more than 40 years. He was one of the earliest developers of the internet-based research in the 1990s, with a special interest in how information flow influences economic attitudes and behavior. Now, after retiring as an executive VP for one of the world's largest research firms, Richard has developed a text analysis of methods to identify leading indicators of critical information and behavioral influences. That sounds like a lot of science, Richard.
Hi there, George. I thought it was a lot of science until it came back to the basics. How does information influence people? And you know, you mentioned before about the Facebook executive.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually pretty simple. But what's happened today is there's too much information. It's too fast. We can't assess what's right, what's wrong. But we still have to make decisions every day. We do the best we can. But we no longer have the time or the luxury to access all that we need. And this is really one of the serious threats that's influencing how we make economic decisions, environmental decisions, social decisions. Information is wonderful, but it's out of control. What are we going to do to get it back? And I saw this in advertising, packaging, new product development. I mean, advertising is, you know, how to, you know, reach and influence and persuade people. Back in the old days when I grew up, we heard about propaganda.
Yeah.
And propaganda was kind of a polite word for what we're seeing today. You know, it's not even the new term of fake news. It's incomplete, inaccurate, late. So this is an overwhelming experience that humans really, as you mentioned in the intro, we were not adapted to process overwhelming information with long-term consequences. It's how do we deal immediately with what we're faced with?
Well, and in the old days, Richard, with propaganda, there was a science behind it. Now, all you got to do is send out something on social network, and it feeds itself.
Exactly. There were experts at it. Now, everybody's an expert, and they don't have facts. They have opinions. There's a writer, James Fallows, to paraphrase what he said, it's unfortunate we now live in an age where opinions are considered a substitute for facts. But I don't know which are opinions and which are facts anymore.
All right, let's bring in Linda. Linda Sherman, of course. Has had a practice in astrology for more than 44 years, serving as a premier clientele that includes corporations, finance service companies, private individuals. Now, in her newsletters, she did predict the attack on America in 2001, the real estate and stock market crash of 2007 and 8, the BP oil eruption, you remember that, in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010, the earthquake and tsunami that hit Japan in 2011, a breakthrough in physics, a lot to do with the God particle from CERN. Linda is back on Coast to Coast. Linda, I'm looking forward to this with you and Richard.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, George. Thank you for having us on. We really have, both Richard and I, we have to tell you a little bit about our story. We never knew each other until January 2nd of last year when you interviewed me on Coast to Coast and Rich heard the broadcast. And up to that time, he had a rather dim vision of what astrologers. And on the interview where you interviewed me, he noticed that my viewpoints using astrology, my projections, my analysis was so similar to his own that after the broadcast, Rich emailed me a long email about this, and we got in a conversation, and to make a long story short, we collaborated on this book, Our Choice, Extinction or Evolution.
I love that.
It was Coast to Coast that brought us together.
Richard, did you ever think you would team up with an astrologer?
No. I mean, I'm open-minded, but, you know, I'm used to the, the lovelorn, but, you know, I was open to, you know, metaphysics and related things, and as I delved into it, and when I first heard Linda, I thought she must have worked for one of the think tanks talking about, you know, trends in technology and economics, and it's like, this is one smart person. When she said astrology, it's like, you know, this is not what I expected. So, you know, being a researcher, I did the research, and I mean, over, you know, maybe all your listeners know this better than I, but, you know, astrology is just a term given to astronomy, which was what it was up until a couple hundred years ago, until it got, you know, hijacked. But what we found is that, I don't want to jump ahead too far, but as an analyst, you're always looking for information that explains what we see or what we want to forecast. And things aren't working so well now. So what kinds of information are we missing? And when I talked to Linda and saw how she was collecting information from the astrological readings, you know, this is what they call statistics, an explanatory variable. There's an element here of information that you can use. It's not perfect, but it helps explain observable behavior, and astrology has been doing it for 5,000 years, a lot longer than the Federal Reserve has been around. So,
yes, I call us the second oldest profession.
Yeah. Love it. Well, now, in both of you, during the course of this discussion, feel free to jump in at any time, unless I specifically address a question to one of you or both of you, but just let's keep it free-flowing. The title, Our Choice, Extinction or Evolution, what does that mean, Linda?
Well, it means that the what Richard and I have been assessing are facts of science, facts of politics, facts of global spread of ideas, technology development, all of these things. We have covered what we feel are the major issues that humankind is facing today, that if we don't face these challenges and deal with the facts and make positive choices, we may be facing extinction. On Earth, we look economic choices and cycles that we're in, information choices, technology choices, energy choices, environmental choices. And the last one is the human consciousness change that needs to take place. We need to come to a recognition that rather than commodifying and stamping and stomping all over the natural environment and threatening to wipe all life out on Earth, including our own, that we have to see ourselves as an extension or a part of this biological web and this miracle of life on this planet, that we cannot continue with this predator-prey consciousness where we're always going to wars with each other and beating each other up and hating each other. We have to work together. And what was remarkable is that both Richard and I, in our studies of getting the facts, found out how many geniuses are out there, how many great solutions are either being proposed or implemented to clean up the environment, to create new technologies. There has to be a greater vision. As Rich said, the bottom line is economics. people aren't going to do anything if they can't have some kind of prosperity in the economy. And right now, what we have is a disparity greater than human civilization has ever seen before. The concentration of wealth in a relative handful of people globally, and everybody else is kind of going down the tubes, I think has resulted in many of the revolutionary elections and craziness that's been going around the globe. The environmental changes. We had three of the worst hurricanes.
Just incredible. Hold on, Linda. We're at the break already, but we'll come back more. It's called Our Choice, Extinction or Evolution. Linda Sherman with us, Richard Spitzer, right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take phone calls next hour with our two special guests, Linda Sherman and Richard Spitzer, as we talk about their work, Our Choice, Extinction or Evolution. And there's lots to get into with them when we come back in a moment. Couple little program notes for you. First of all, Coast to Coast is very excited, and we all are here to announce the debut of our official and one and only YouTube channel. For the very first time, we are offering to all of you, and new audiences alike, a complimentary hour-long excerpt from many of our shows. Now, we know many of our listeners use YouTube as they go place to place for audio and visual media, and we wanted to share Coast to Coast with YouTube's thriving global audience. Check out our new YouTube channel by clicking on the YouTube icon on coasttocoastam.com. It's right there at the website. Or simply type Coast to Coast AM Official. Make sure you get that in there. Coast to Coast AM Official on the YouTube search page and have some fun. Now our couple live stage show announcements for you. In Salt Lake City, looking forward in March 10th, circle that on your calendar, at the Janae Wagner Theater. It's called The Invasion of Salt Lake City by ancient technology expert Jason Martell, the man who died several times and lived to talk about it, Danian Brinkley, ufologist Nick Pope. I'll be there with a live band also. It's just a great program with a meet and greet and your Q&A. It's an incredible show. This is how you get tickets in Salt Lake City. You can go to coasttocoastam.com, right there in the carousel, one of the last buttons. Just hit it, and that should come up. If not, call the box office there at the Janae Wagner Theater at 1-801-355-2787. That's 801-355-ARTS. Their website is artsaltlake.org, artsaltlake.org. And then in Scottsdale, Arizona, they're going to keep me busy next year, at the Virginia G. Piper Theater, our live stage show there on April 21st, totally different program. You're going to love it. And again, everything at coasttocoastam.com, or call the box office there in Scottsdale, where they tell us tickets are going like crazy. Call 1-480-499-8587, 480-499-8587, or their ticket website is scottsdalearts.org. And welcome back to Coast. We are with the analyst Richard Spitzer and the astrologer Linda Sherman as we're talking about Our Choice, Extinction or Evolution. And Linda, let's let you wrap up from what we were talking about some of these urgent issues, and then we'll move on.
Well, we feel, Rich and I really feel that these issues that I just outlined for you are the big areas of focus. We also feel, as dire as the circumstances are that we are in today, the hurricanes that hit the East Coast this summer, the fires that have decimated parts of California that all of you Californians, I'm sure, are experiencing firsthand, are only the beginning, in my mind, of a series of ecological disasters that we face due to climate change. Now, you can argue about who did it or who created it, but it is up on us, and we have to face these things. I believe, and Richard believes, that if we face these issues and look at them head on, that we have within us the ability to make the right choices, that we, and through massive technological change and innovation that we talk about in our book, and certain surprise things that, as an astrologer, the planetary pictures are presenting to me, that gives me hope for that future, the combination of those two things, I think that it is possible for humanity to survive this and to go beyond anything we ever dreamed of before.
Richard, how did we get involved in this situation? How did it get out of control?
Well, you know, when I talk to people about this, you know, we say, well, we've always had problems. We've always had wars. We've always had conflicts. But what's happened, you know, as I've tracked some of these things over in my research career, is that whether you call it a tipping point or the perfect storm or convergence, but now there are so many happening at the same time. They all have potentially harmful consequences. We don't have the resources to deal with them effectively at once. And yeah, like I say, we have to make choices. So the fact that things are really in this, you know, hyper-economy, hyper-information environment, technology is far ahead of our ability to manage it and apply it productively as we'd like. So there's too much too fast. And, you know, innovation and invention has been great. But as Linda mentioned before, one of the old-fashioned criteria that has always led it in recent times has been still economic factors, short-term quarterly profits. The great management guru Peter Drucker said in an article in Fortune maybe 30 years ago, he said the downfall of America will be rampant corporate greed, that as long as you're making quarterly decisions, you aren't planning for the future. Well, we've arrived there. Infrastructure is crumbling, and it's not as nothing to do with war in North Korea, but the whole global chaos is connected to several things of misunderstanding, economic imperatives, and unknown factors that are out of control. Mostly, you know, my main concern is the whole realm of information security and cybersecurity, not, you know, that someone's going to steal my password, but in effect, we've all heard of MAD, mutually assured destruction, you know, from a nuclear standpoint. But I think we have the same thing with information. Any one country now, Russia, China, U.S., maybe Iran, maybe North Korea, could bring down an entire country tomorrow with cyber technology. And they probably have not, because it would be a quick retaliation. So we've gotten to this mess because we've been focused on short-term profits, short-term innovation, instead of what's going to sustain us for the long time. And, you know, so we are at this tipping point. There's a great English economist, E.F. Schumacher, who was very popular in the 50s and 60s, and he talked about these things extensively. And to paraphrase one of his quotes, he said, sure, we had these things, you know, and we come back from them. People say, oh, see, it wasn't so bad. But to paraphrase his quote, eventually we will overwhelm nature's ability to heal itself. But that's also, you know, from the human standpoint. I agree with Linda, there is hope. And, you know, without being too cynical, I think the very institutions that have been slow, primarily business, not even include the politicians, they're probably the best ones to save everything. Why? Because there's a vested interest. They have the organization, the skills. They do have long-term views if they are motivated to do something for two things, the greater good and profit.
Well, do you think they care about the greater good, though?
Not to the extent that I think they should.
Right.
They probably never will, but there could be some leadership changes. But if it takes profit motive to change the course of the current trends to, you know, sort of mandate new choices, then they'll do it. They've done it before. They'll do it again. But there's got to be some leadership, which is lacking everywhere. It's not isolated to any one party.
I agree with Richard on everything that he said. We need leadership politically instead of the devastations on both sides of the aisle that we have presently. We need political. We need a balance between government helping us with infrastructure and safety, and entrepreneurial capitalism that is innovative and exciting. We need a balance, and we need a monumental will as Rich said, for the greater good. There are some billionaires today that really are motivated to use their money and everything, like, for instance, Elon Musk and Richard Branson, to create things that are positive for the human race as a whole. We can't put everybody under one umbrella. There are good guys and bad guys in both the powerful positions in government and the powerful positions in economics and in finance. But right now, the selfishness and greed that Richard alluded to is such a dominant force. It terrifies me. One of the things I do want to bring up is Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and the emergence of this blockchain currency, which is a deep disturbance that very few people on the whole are looking at today. It's my view that it's not so much about Bitcoin and its huge rise, which has had. It is that the government is carefully looking at this, because I think we're moving toward an all-digital currency, getting rid of cash, getting rid of gold, getting rid of anything that would back anything, and turning ourselves over to governments that are administrating this digital currency, which means we could be hacked, because, as Rich points out, cybersecurity is a major yep. problem. And we could be hacked, or we could be erased from existence by somebody who doesn't want us there. So I'm really, really concerned that the Star Trek, you know, the Borg, people huh. like that, that's what this digital cryptocurrency phenomenon reminds me of. We lose all private control over our money, our finances. This is just one thing among many other things that I think is scary, the environment and environmental change being the scariest of all. But we've got to forge alliances between government and private enterprise. It can't be, we have these battles, you know, whether it's socialism or plutocratic capitalism, that we got to come together instead of hating each other and work together to create a better world. And it's only in cooperation with each other that is going to be done. And as Rich said, we've got to have committed, charismatic, articulate leadership to help us along the way.
There's a factor here, though, that I find dangerous, and that is the greed factor.
Yes.
Richard, what do you think?
Well, the greed factor can't be erased, but it's got to be put in a new context. You know, from an economic standpoint, when you're trying to increase profits, when you're trying to do capture market share, that's all great. But the way the middle class, the way, as you pointed out, that the U.S. became the greatest economic power in history was a growing, prosperous middle class. And to be cynical, nothing is better than more people making more money that they spend on refrigerators and trips and cars and iPads. So, you know, but yet the average household income has been relatively stagnant. It's growing very slowly. So the idea that we're going to try and narrowly capture more and more profits at the expense of the worker is not sustainable. It's that wonderful phrase. Why do people vote against their self-interest? If I were a business owner, and there's some, like, during the last couple elections who said, you know, I'm a billionaire. I don't need any more money. I have 3 houses and 6 refrigerators. I can't buy any more refrigerators. So the greed is, I don't know, is it ideology? Is it psychology? Is it a scorecard? I think it's all of those. But if they would step back and say, the best thing for my long-term business and to maximize my profits is to get more people buying more things and keep up the stream of money. But that's not the mindset of too many companies. It's short-term gauges of monetary scorecards instead of what's my business going to look like in 10 years? How do I increase the overall market? And it's not just new customers. If there's a prosperous consumer demand, and as you know, many of you know, I mean, consumer demand, consumer goods is about 70% of our economy.
Sure.
You know, it's not just buying new things. If we could afford it, you know, people buy a new TV every 2 years, they buy a new car every 3 years. But that's the economy that would be, you know, immensely sustainable and fund a lot of other things. So greed is, it's an old-fashioned greed. It's a thing you mentioned before. It's how do we get here? We're hanging on to vestiges of the past instead of looking at what the new economy should look like, because there's a lot of people, it's global, it's not local, and you need a new paradigm for what is long-term economic flow going to look like.
Linda, as an astrologer, how does that tie into all these things that when you teamed up with Richard? But how does astrology tie into this?
Well, astrology is, you know, as you know, is a study of astronomical events in relationship to cycles and climates here on Earth. We study cycles. We study when a planet transits, say, a sign, the last time it transited that sign. We look at the history of that, what happened when it went through that sign before. History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. So we can look into the heavens and say, well, Pluto is transiting Capricorn again. Well, what happened the last time that it happened? Well, in the 1500s, it was the Protestant Reformation that overthrew the establishment. And then the most recent time Pluto transited Capricorn was the American Revolution. So we could safely say that religion was going to go through a major upheaval, which it has. And we could say that we're in the midst right now, between now and over the next several years, of a kind of new American Revolution. None of these things happen identical to the way they did before, but they give us a key as to what expect lying ahead. This is what we do. And the planetary pictures that I see lying ahead of us are very much in agreement with the things that Richard sees through his data analysis. So we finish each other's sentences frequently. We see this lying ahead, both of us.
If,
can I add a couple of footnotes to that?
Sure, Rich, go ahead.
That, you know, sort of taught me two things. One is astrology deals with cycles, and analysts want large data sets.
Right.
That's the easy one. I made a tour of some banks a few years ago showing my new economic models, and they said, well, this is new. Do you have 10 or 15 years of data? I said, well, no, it's new. I've got 3 years of data. Try it. No, we need 15 years of data. Well, Linda's talking about astrology. It's got 5,000 years of observable data. Why is that not being accounted for in our analysis? Well, there's a reason, because it hasn't been quantified in a way. But the other thing that astounded me when I looked at Linda's charts and astrology was, everything's about cycles, you know, repeating patterns of astronomical conditions. And those things are identifiable, observable, they've been measured. And I have a whole chapter in the book about making the case for astronomy and astrology in decision-making, because everything is cyclical. A radio wave is a cycle, sunspots have cycles. Our entire agricultural system throughout the world is based on seasonal cycles. Futures, yields, everything is based on cycles. The one cycle that we know exists that is not factored into any economic models really is what we call astrology. So I think it's correct. There's lots to do. It's not perfect, but it does show probabilities and tendencies that have been consistent over centuries. If we can find a way to quantify it in a way that, you know, mainstream people can plug it into a model and say, here's a new variable we didn't have before. That doesn't mean we don't do something, but it says, if I knew that winter was going to come 2 months early, I would plan accordingly. Well, with what Linda does, says, I give you a heads up on probabilities and tendencies. If you know that ahead of time, how you factor that into your decisions of risk management or other decision making? So 5,000 years of data is the greatest data set on the planet, and yet we have not found a way to quantify it in a way that satisfies the scientists.
Linda, where do people get the book, Our Choice?
You can go directly and order it off of Amazon.com. You can go to my website, which is Soothsayer, S-O-O-T-H-E-S-A-Y-E-R.com. and order it, click onto the picture on my website. And Rich, I believe we can order it from your website if you want to give it to people.
Yeah, well, we have a dedicated website for the book.
Right.
www.extinctionevolutionchoice.com.
And we've got links for both of you and the book set up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back and talk more with both of you about our choice. We'll also open up the phone lines, and you can chime in, folks, because what do you think needs to be fixed in order to correct what could be a disaster in the future? And we're talking extinction.